Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Every Sunday morning at 9, join me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM. Each week we'll be exploring the wonderful world of modern jazz. From hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz, Sunday mornings at 9 on Sheffield Live.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Don? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3, here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 AM. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 AM.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
Before. It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 PM here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
N-E-X.
Good morning. Welcome to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital if you're in South Yorkshire, or sheffieldlive.org. We're here every Saturday morning, 11 till 12, talking about science in all its different forms and playing some rather cool music as well. So oh, we yes. like to think you've got Julian Pauly alive, of course. Later in this hour, we'll be talking to our PG. No guest speaker this week. Our Phil's having a Saturday off. He was on last week talking to us about all sorts of things in the sky. And I'll be talking about something that's coming up tomorrow as well, later on in this hour. All being well, next week and indeed every second Saturday of the month, our guest speaker is Dr. Ogo Osamor. First up today, though, is a story our friend Chris sent in to us. He sent it the other week, actually. He's our guest speaker for every fourth Saturday of the month, of course. But this was about a pea allergy almost killed my boy. It's only right to add it to food labels. And this was in the news probably the end of August,
yes,
I
it
think.
Was. Yes.
So here we go.
One morning before school, Rex, age 9, ate a hot cross bun. Minutes later, he was struggling to breathe and went into anaphylactic shock. Rex is allergic to peas and lentils, ingredients you would not commonly expect to find in a hot cross bun. However, when Rex's mums looked at the packaging, it turned out that the glazing used on the bun contained pea protein, causing Rex's allergic reaction. Pea is not one of the 14 allergens required by law to be listed on food labels, but earlier this week, experts said it, among others, should be. Rex's father, Tom, says it feels like a lot of these things are booby-trapped. We couldn't understand why, he says. It wasn't a vegan recipe. What is pea protein doing in a hot cross bun? After he went into anaphylactic shock, Rex was quickly given the EpiPen. And taken to hospital. He made a full recovery, but hot cross buns aren't the only unassuming product he's been tripped up by. During June's heatwave, Rex bought an ice cream after school from a corner shop, as he'd eaten this particular brand before. He didn't check the packaging, but unbeknownst to him, the ice cream now contained pea protein and caused another allergic reaction. Tom says Rex is now terrified of accidentally eating pea and having an allergic reaction. He agrees with experts that the list of 40 allergens should be expanded to include pea and feels frustrated as it is being increasingly added to foods.
A game of roulette, that's how the article said. And as I said, this was during August, this story, end of August. Under current regulations, food packaging in the UK and EU already lists the most common allergens for people to be aware of, such as egg, peanuts and sesame. They must be clearly emphasised, usually in bold on labels, while restaurants will either list allergens on menus or inform customers verbally. But Rex isn't the only child being caught out by pea protein in products. In 2023, Becky gave her son an ice lolly he'd eaten before with no issues whatsoever. However, the now five-year-old quickly began coughing while his throat became irritated. The lolly contained pea protein, which her son, like Rex, is severely allergic to. For Becky and her husband, expanding the allergens list to include clear warnings for peas would be life-changing and a massive weight off their minds. It's getting harder and harder to say, well, it probably doesn't contain pea, because pea is in things that you would never think it would be, she added. It's like playing a game of roulette. And Chris has been on about this for probably a year or so now, about food, what's in our foods. You don't always know, particularly with ultra-processed foods.
Although it's becoming more common, people with a pea allergy are finding it's not taken as seriously as other allergies. Charlotte, 25, is allergic to all pulses, including peas, chickpeas and lentils. She would welcome expanding the allergen list, as it would make people more aware of her allergies, as she's frequently told it's not a real allergy. I think because it's kind of like a joke that people don't like peas, people think that I've just been fussy, she says. People just don't consider it a real allergy or even understand what it is. Charlotte says this can make eating out quite hard. 2 weeks ago, she went out for dinner in London and had an allergic reaction, but staff insisted her food wasn't contaminated. I ended up apologising that I was having an allergic reaction because it felt so embarrassed. I was making inconvenience for them. Becky also says her son has had similar experiences. He's allergic to egg, peanuts, nuts, sesame, chickpeas, peas and lentils, but his reaction to pea is seen very differently. Even though it's as severe, it's not worse than his reaction to peanuts.
So it's not just pea allergies that are becoming more common, funnily enough. Experts also suggest that allergic reaction warning labels should be added to foods containing pine nuts, buckwheat, sheep and goat's milk. Annabelle, 20, has just completed a degree at the University of Cambridge. She's allergic to pine nuts and believes adding them to a list of allergens could potentially be life-saving for her. Like Charlotte, Annabelle finds communicating her allergies to restaurant staff can be very hit or miss. I often feel like my allergy is not taken seriously, she says. When I state an allergy to pine nuts, the vast majority of time they reply, peanuts, ? She says staff often tell her that there's no nuts in her food, but thinks that they just mean nuts, which are recognised as part of the 14 allergens. She's had three anaphylactic reactions, including when she was informed by restaurants that her meal did not contain pine nuts. Annabelle says adding it to the food list would make her feel so much more confident when eating out. A lot of my family like to eat out quite a lot, and I often don't want to go. Or when I'm with my friends, I'm always telling everyone around me, this is where my EpiPens are. This is what you should do if something happens. Because you have to be safe, and she doesn't want to have to worry about it. So the Food Standards Agency said earlier it's recognised that there were significant number of foods that could cause allergies or intolerances. And while Allergy UK said it was calling for full ingredient labelling on all food products while keeping an eye on worrying trends. So watch this space.
And my time was running wild, a million dead-end streets, and every time I thought I got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me, but I've never caught a glimpse of how the others must see the faker. I'm much too fast to take that test. Changes.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes. Don't wanna be a richer man.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes. It's gonna have to be a different man. Now may change me. Size, but never leave the stream of warm and permanent sand. So the days float through my eyes, but still the days seem the same. And these children that you spit on as they try to change their worlds are immune to your consultations. They're quite aware of what they're going through.
Changes.
Turn and face the strange.
Changes.
Don't tell them to grow up out of it.
Changes. Turn and face the strange.
Changes. Where's your shame? You've left us up to her next to me. Time may change me. You can't twist time. Strange fascination.
There we Ooh. Were. You see, enjoying that lovely track. That was that was Changes by David Bowie. And we were talking about the story from our, well, our Chris sent it to us a couple of weeks back. A pea allergy almost killed my boy. It's only right to add it to food labels. But it seems like peas are not the only issue in this ever-changing world. And is it all down to ultra-processed foods? People become more allergic, who knows? Of course, listen to the Live Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM on digital. If you're in South Yorkshire, sheffieldlive.org. You can listen online there. You can also download the podcast and listen later at your leisure. Next is a story I saw in The Weather Eye by Jeremy Plaister. It's a rather interesting story, this. It starts with saying the battle for meteorological supremacy in the Second World War was fought way out in the Atlantic. This was before the days of satellites and large-scale remote sensing equipment. So a detailed understanding of what what type of weather was approaching from the Atlantic proved to be an enormous strategic advantage. Ship movements could be concealed very effectively under low cloud and fog scenarios, keeping important naval manoeuvres or supply shipments away from the prying eyes of German reconnaissance aircraft. British airmen hunted the U-boats, which reaped such destruction on supply ships coming from the United States to the North Cornish coast and Scotland, flying sorties into the Bay of Biscay and North Atlanta and the North Atlantic, searching for any sign of submarine activity. On board, they used radar and line of sight to track down the U-boats. Any sign of low cloud made these hunts virtually impossible. To get better weather forecasts, both the U.S. Coast Guard and Royal Navy sent vessels into the North Atlantic to provide weather data to Allied command, and that was a perilous task, as you might imagine. By the end of the war, there were as many as 20 vessels in the Atlantic and a similar number in the Pacific, sending back regular bulletins. By 1940, the Germans had also sent their own vessels into the Atlantic. Unfortunately for the whole German war effort, this would hand the Allies an enormous advantage. The German weather boats decoded their signals with the code books used by the Enigma machines and the code breakers at Bletchley, realised if they could capture one of the weather boats with this information on board, they could crack the codes. In the spring of 1941, German weather ships became a prime target for the Royal Navy, and after the capture of the German weather vessels München and Leonberg, by the end of June, the code crackers were handed the documentation they needed to decipher the code. What a fascinating story.
Bye.
Squiggly Tracky. That was About the Weather by Magazine. Can you believe that's from 1981?
81.
We played that because we're talking about the weather boats used by, well, Germany and England during the Second World War. And the fact that once captured one of the German boats, the Bletchley team, Bletchley Park team, went on to use that to crack the Enigma codes. Amazing stuff. You're, of course, listening to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM. We're here every Saturday morning, 11 until 12. Talk about science in all its different forms. I saw this in the Sunday Times on Sunday, actually, last day of August. It said, it caught my eye, I thought it was an interesting one. New blood pressure pill will help 10 million people. So a new drug to treat blood pressure that could cut the risk of strokes and heart attacks for 10 million Britons has been hailed as a triumph of science. Baxdrostat, created by AstraZeneca, may be available in little over a year. Now, University College London, or UCL for short, which led a trial of the drug, said that 500 million people around the world could benefit from the drug, which promises to be particularly useful for those who do not respond to existing treatments. The results were presented the other week at the European Society of Cardiology's annual conference in Madrid. And if untreated, uncontrolled high blood pressure, known as hypertension, can increase the risk of serious health problems such as heart attack, stroke, heart failure and kidney disease. Now, the thing is about high blood pressure, it doesn't necessarily make you feel unwell. So you might actually not know you've got it until you pop to your doctor's, have your blood pressure checked, and invariably it's not what they want it to be. But yeah, so nearly 800 people whose high blood pressure had not been brought down by medication were given the daily tablet called Baxdrostat. We're given that during the 12-week trial at 214 clinics around the world. Now, about 40% of patients taking that new drug, which is Baxdrostat, so you might hear that a lot more in the coming years, about 40% of people taking that reached a healthy blood pressure during that trial period. Imagine it's only 12 weeks, with less than 20% taking a placebo. Now, Baxdrostat works by blocking the production of a hormone called aldosterone, which helps the kidneys regulate salt and water. Some people produce too much aldosterone, which increases their blood pressure. By blocking the production of the hormone, the drug allows scientists to address the core problem behind high blood pressure. Results of the trial were published in the New England Journal of Medicine. Pressure.
turned away from it all like a blind man. Sat on the fence, but it don't work.
Keep coming up with love, but it's so slashed and torn.
Queen and David Bowie, what a cracking track that was. Under Pressure, of course. I think that was 1981. We played that because we're talking about a new blood pressure pill. Apparently will help 10 million. Baxter Stat, created by AstraZeneca, may be available to us in little over a year. All good stuff. Before we speak to RPG, we've got some more news coming up here on the Life Science Radio Show, Sheffield Live 93.2 FM, of course.
Yes.
First up, the UK Space Agency, or UKSA for short, will cease to exist as an independent entity and will be absorbed by the Department for Science, Innovation and Technology, or DSIT. That will happen in April 2026, so not that far away, in order to save money and cut duplication, so says the government. The UKSA was created in 2010 to develop the UK's space strategy and coordinate research and commercial activities, including the development of small spacecraft, satellites and space instrumentation. The space sector generates an estimated £18.6 billion a year and employs 55,000 people across this country. So the UKSA and its budget and activities will now be absorbed into the Department for Science, Innovation and Technology, following a commitment from the UK government to cut the number of arm's length bodies, which is basically a QANGOs, which stands for quasi-autonomous non-governmental organisations. And that's part of a commitment. And, of course, it's abolished the NHS as well, which is another QANGO, wow. Can you believe? Yeah, interesting stuff. A lot of people in the space sector are very unhappy about that merger. But interesting stuff, eh?
Anyway, quick change of subject. Red squirrels have returned to the heart of Aberdeen, making a triumph in the campaign to restore their fortune.
Hurrah! This next story, I think, is a cracker of a story. Research led by the University of Oxford in conjunction with Royal Botanic Gardens Kew, University of Greenwich and the Technical University of Denmark have developed a honeybee superfood that could protect them against the threats of climate change and habitat loss. So honeybees are a vital part of food production and contribute to pollinating 70% of leading global crops. Honeybees feed on pollen and nectar from flowers that contain the nutrients, including lipids called sterols, that are necessary for their development. The bees make honey in hives, which become their food source over winter when flowers have stopped producing pollen. Birds, when beekeepers take out the honey to sell, or, as increasingly is the case, there isn't enough pollen available, they give the insects supplementary food. But generally that food is made up of protein, flour, sugar and water, and that's always like the nutrients bees require. Sounds like an ultra-processed food diet, doesn't it? Sterol has always proved very difficult to manufacture, but the study team led by the University of Oxford has after 15 years, can you believe, finally developed a yeast that can produce the 6 sterols that bees need. So bee colonies that ate that supplement during the trials had up to 15 times more baby bees that grew to adulthood. Larger scale trials are now needed to assess the long-term impacts of the food on the honeybees, but the supplement could be available to beekeepers and farmers within 2 years. Wow.
Wow. Half of stroke patients are now expected to fully recover after the NHS introduced a revolutionary AI-assisted tool in all 107 stroke centres in England to enable rapid processing and interpretation of CT scans so that patients can be diagnosed up to an hour faster than using traditional methods. During a stroke, blood supply to parts of the brain is blocked or reduced, causing the brain cells to die at an estimated 2 million per minute.
That's a lot of brain cells to lose. Yeah.
Without fast treatment, a stroke can result in death or long-term disabilities such as memory loss, problems communicating or paralysis. More than 60,000 people have had strokes diagnosed or ruled out since the roll of the software last summer. And NHS England and analysts showed a sharp improvement in the proportion of people making a full recovery from 16% to 48%.
Great. It's a very, very interesting story, that. So, you know, Paul Gregory, it will be coming on soon, but he often talks about artificial intelligence and the pros and cons. And as with all technological advances and scientific advances, there's always some good positives that come out of it and also negatives. But there you go, a very, very good negative there. Final story, our Phil Muffet from Mexman Swinson Astronomical Society. We had him on last week for his Eye on the Sky. He was talking about this event, and it's tomorrow, yes. So a lunar eclipse, also known as a blood moon, is taking place tomorrow. That's Sunday, the 7th of September, 2025. And the good news, as Phil said last week, it should be partly visible from the UK, so you don't have to travel halfway around the world. So a lunar eclipse is when the Earth is between the Sun and the Moon, meaning the Moon is in the Earth's shadow. Now, during a total eclipse, the Moon can take on a red-orange colour, which is why it's sometimes called a blood moon. This will be the second lunar eclipse of 2025. Also, some good news, unlike a solar eclipse, people do not need to wear protective glasses to see a lunar eclipse. Now, as well as Phil advising us about the details of this last week, the Royal Museums at Greenwich have officially advised that in the UK, the moon is due to rise above the horizon just in time for people to see the total lunar eclipse, and that the maximum will occur at 7:33 PM BST from the UK, that's tomorrow, with the eclipse's actual maximum at 7:11 PM when the moon is below the horizon. The moon will then gradually move out of the Earth's shadow, and that will last until about 9:55 PM tomorrow. The advice from Royal Museums Greenwich and even our Phil is find a high point if you can with a clear view to the east, as the moon will be low on the horizon and quite difficult to see. So that's a lunar eclipse tomorrow. It will be visible from the UK. It's called a blood moon. Sunday, 7th September, you should be looking out your window from 7 PM. Fingers crossed for a clear night, I guess.
We'll be right back.
very interesting track there. Blood and Rockets, Movement 1 and 2, Saga of Jack Parsons, To the Moon, from the Claypool Lennon Delirium. I think that's Sean Lennon, not Julian, sounding very much like his father nonetheless. We played that, so we'll talk about Lunar Eclipse tomorrow, known as the Blood Moon. Tomorrow, Sunday, the 7th of September. Look out your window to High Point if you can. Clear view to the east from about 7 p.m. All good stuff. You listen to the Life Science Radio Show here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM on digital in South Yorkshire or sheffieldlive.org. Talking about science in all its different forms every week, 11 till 12. We should have our PG on the line.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Oh, another rocket there. Good morning, PG.
Good morning.
Oh, yes, loud and clear, Paul. How are you?
Yeah, fine today. It's looking nice out.
It is. It's not looking bad, is it? You're later than usual. It's all very odd.
I know. I don't know. What am I doing?
I know. So what's caught your eye then in the science news this week?
Well, a few things. I think I can't sort of remember if you've touched on the emergency test tomorrow that's going to happen on our phones at 3 p.m. Sunday. So there's going to be a government test to check the emergency alert response. And I think we did it last year, but it seems to be becoming a recurrent thing for the government to test a way of communicating en masse with us by sending a siren sound, making sure you're there to receive any warnings. So probably the increased tension with nuclear threats is one of the things at the back of their minds. So if you get a strange sort of siren sound from your phone tomorrow afternoon about 3 o'clock, it's a government test.
Oh.
Currently the phone I'm using is a 2G phone, and I got a message to text through to warn me of it. But I think in some of the documentation, it's talking about actually the smarter levels of 3G, 4G, 5G will get the test response as well. But it ain't all good, because one of the warnings that came out is to say that some women in abusive relationships could be put in danger by it. And the reasoning behind that is that quite often that they will keep a hidden second phone somewhere because they're under duress in their relationship, and it might just let the cat out of the bag as to where their emergency secret phone is.
Oh.
So good intentions, but they don't always come out with good intentions all round, I think, is what we said. And I think also we're talking about food additives. And there are moves afoot to consider creating a ban for children having high caffeine energy drinks.
Oh, interesting.
And they cite Monster and Red Bull as one of the things. So I think by comparison, look at a Coca-Cola, which has got caffeine in it. It's got something like 97 milligrams, whereas the energy drinks have got 400 milligrams. So significant amounts of it. And what schools are noticing is that children who are using these all the time have got less ability to concentrate, and their sort of mental and physical health is deteriorating because of the use of the high caffeine energy drinks.
Yeah, combined with never coming off the mobile phones is a difficult combination, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think that's one of the sort of issues. And I think the other issues now are, again, we've got a cyber attack underway in the UK with Jaguar Land Rover. They've had to isolate their systems to try and eradicate the problem of a cyber attack. That's on the back of the ones for the retail sector, Marks and Spencer's, Co-op, and others have had a cyber attack. So cyber world is looking at a shaky place at the moment, and I think in the UK the government's tried to change a little bit about the Turing Institute, which is looks after artificial intelligence for the UK, and they wanted a bit of a change of direction, so the head of that has just stepped down, so there are going to be changes there amid a time when we've got lots of problems with sort of computer-based systems. And it's not just here. There's also news from Russia that all over the country they've been having problems. They widely use WhatsApp and the Russian kind of system called Telegram. And I think there are something like 90 million plus users on both of those systems. President Putin has long had a problem with those apps being used because, I mean, he cited it as a CIA a scheme to invade the privacy of people. So a user of WhatsApp in Russia called Marina uses WhatsApp for her work and personal life. And then one day last month, she couldn't put a call through to a colleague. So they switched and tried Telegram, and that didn't work either. And millions of Russians have been facing new restrictions that have been imposed from mid-August by Russia's media regulator, Roskomnadzor, on calls that are made through the two platforms. And it kind of coincides with the launch of what they're calling a new national messenger app known as Max, created by a Russian firm, which is, they say, closely controlled by the Kremlin. Trying to migrate people across in some parts of Russia, particularly in remote and sparsely connected places, WhatsApp's used for a huge range of things. And they use mobile browsing, and the government's been turning off whole cities and parts of regions, saying that they're creating a threat to drone attacks from the Ukraine in the situation between Russia and Ukraine. But telecom experts see this as a crackdown by the government, so they can actually keep an eye on what people are saying and their chats. So if they want everyone to sit quietly in their own corner, says Marina, that's a city that's 180 kilometres from Moscow, and she's been given a false name just to cover herself. But this new app's been aggressively promoted. They're using Russian pop stars and bloggers, and since the 1st of September, all devices sold in Russia must have this app, Max, pre-installed. So it's launched by a company called VK, which is the largest social network of the same name in Russia. It's like a Facebook kind of platform. It's controlled and operated by the oil and gas giant Gazprom, which is also part of the close circle of Vladimir Putin. So many are seeing it as a way of controlling the population by giving government access to their messages and their talk.
It's a very interesting one, Paul, because China has already got a similar situation. You can't have certain apps. They've got to be approved.
Yeah,
yeah, and I find that quite incredible. And I looked at some visa requirements. Somebody had written into a newspaper saying, what are the requirements to go to China? What do I need to know? And one was about you can't use WhatsApp or anything. And then you've got to use state, you know, approved software.
Search engines.
Don't take any money. You've got to have you can't pay for anything in cash. You've got to pay on card, so they know what you're spending. It's incredible. So now Russia's seemingly going the same way.
Yeah, and lots of things. And here in the UK, we've got conversations going on about having digital identity cards, which is an old chestnut and keeps reappearing. Latest version is that it's in some way going to help to control the small boat crossings for immigrants. I think they probably need to do a bit more work to sell that to me on how exactly that's going to work, apart from insisting that everybody's got an ID card so it's easy when they pick up people working in the country to see whether they've got an ID card or whether they're here illegally. An awful lot of controls coming in on the internet, so I think quite a few people are questioning what they do. And I remember we spoke probably getting a couple of years ago now when Tim Berners-Lee was talking about creating a new sort of access system for using the internet, which you controlled your privacy with the app. It didn't let cookies through from lots of companies, and I've talked about this quite a few times, where you'll see that they say, oh, we need your consent for you to use this site. And if you look at the consent and start to scroll through it, you can find that there are several hundreds, if not a thousand plus, interested parties who want to gain access to the information on your use of the internet and what your search sort of processes are to best control you. And again, there's if you look at the wider thing of how that can impact in countries, I think there's a move from the Trump administration in America, I think talking on his social media, saying that he could quite well interfere with upcoming elections. So there's an awful lot of things. I think there was a big scandal the first time he was elected of the background use from Cambridge Analytica to provide data and targeting for information to go to potential voters. So you've kind of got to look slightly underneath the cover, if not deeply under the cover of most things that you use, if you have any fears about your information and your preferences being used and possibly not in a way that you want them to be.
Mm, interesting world we live in, Paul.
It certainly is. I think lots of stuff, but on the other side of the coin, a thing that caught my eye, I signed up for my flu jab for this year, which is going to be next month, and I thought about vaccines, because I also earlier been told that I'm now in an age group which is kind of between things, and I won't necessarily get a COVID top-up.
Oh,
which is great news after I had COVID just about 3 weeks ago.
Well, it's not a laughing matter, is it? Because no. It is back. But yeah.
But again, you know, there's a real problem now. I went online when I realised I took a test that I got COVID. There's no requirement for reporting now. So the data in terms of the number of cases, it's not being created. And the question is whether it's becoming economics rather than health in terms of allocation of the COVID jabs. And again, in America, there's a big push by the Trump administration against vaccinations. I think the Florida state person in charge of health is questioning the use of vaccines. Certainly JFK Jr., who's in charge of the department, is an anti-vaxxer or a real sort of confrontational view on vaccinations. And again, the data, I think America seems to be buying into herd immunity. and with a recent upsurge of measles, there was a sharp reminder that herd immunity looks for 95% of people to be covered. And again, there's a balancing act. There was with COVID when it started to drop below 50% uptake. There were questions raised, and then there were people saying, well, we should go for herd immunity. It looks like we're heading into that stage now. So I think you just got to be wary. And the only advice, I think, from me, from the NHS site, was to phone your doctor. Phone my doctor, and the receptionist said, oh, yeah, so what do you want? So, well, I've been advised to contact my doctor to find out if I need to go for antivirals or anything. I said, I will get the doctor to phone you back. They said, okay, what are your symptoms? Yes, got your symptoms. So paracetamol, bed rest, goodbye. Which is a bit worrying. I think if you've not experienced it, then you've got that to come. And I say there's not an awful lot of background and help available unless you're in more severe condition.
Yeah. It's an interesting one about the, you know, anti-vaccine and stuff, because people of a certain generation will remember, you know, measles and chicken pox and mumps, and they can be really nasty diseases. My mum Absolutely. Went blind in one eye because she got measles in her eye. You know, people can die from it, and the only reason those illnesses are being eradicated is through vaccination, isn't it? And
taking us past that,
and you can't go backwards. You know, I'm sure I've seen articles in the press where parents have written in and said, you know, my child nearly died, but you because they weren't vaccinated.
Yeah,
you know, but you can't change that at the point that the child, you know, is. You can't retrospectively solve that, can you?
Well, I think the thing is, it's immunisation, so it's trying to make you immune to these diseases. And again, one of the problems on the internet, there was a huge sort of movement to undermine that vaccination by saying there are these side effects, there are these problems, you're really endangering children, especially the triple, which was...
Yeah, the MMR, yeah.
So now they've added a fourth to the suggestion for children here in the UK. But across the world, there are so many different uptakes. And again, one of the problems in America is that the Department of Disease Control is under pressure from the administration. They're taking away funding. And a lot of the support for some of the medical aid programs has been taken away. Indeed, the UK has cut back some of its aid around the world. And we're not party to the details, generally, of what that does. So, again, you know, there's an upsurge of Ebola, which is a very terrifying disease. It's happening in Africa, so there's a bit of a distance buffer for most people.
Yeah, but they're talking about mosquitoes and malaria coming towards them. I'm going to have to let you go, Paul, because we've got the film showing. They're after their August break. They're raring to go. So great stuff, Paul, as always. We shall speak Monday on Glory Days Rock Show 1 till 3.
Look forward to it.
Bye-bye, Paul. Bye.
Cheers. Bye.